Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Megan Cullop, along here with Scott Micklin.
Good morning, everybody. It is Monday, December 7th, week
39.
It's on the screen.
It is.
And there
I know.
You go.
Our calendar queen is like way ahead of us
on
these
it.
Days.
She's on it.
I know.
So when we appreciate that.
We do.
Here we are at week 39, everybody. We're glad that you are with us. It's our COVID-19 Community Information Program from KSJE. And today we are excited to share more local information about what is going on in the community in response to COVID-19. We're going to be joined by a couple of guests this hour, including Jeff Bourgeois, the President and CEO of Sammo Regional Medical Center. And also we'll be getting a live update from Marquita Russell, who is the CEO of the New Mexico Finance Authority. And she's going to be talking about some new small business grants available to businesses in New Mexico. The applications start being accepted today, and they're only going to be available, I think, for just maybe 7 or 8 days, and we'll get the details about that. But it's a short window to apply, which is why we wanted to get her on the show today.
Yeah, this is like breaking news.
It is, right? So Anyway, so that's what's coming up, in addition to all the other information that we share with you about testing and other things that are going on in the community. So we will get right to it and talk a little bit about kind of what's going on with testing this week.
Yes.
And that includes sites now, which has moved from Sammo College out to McGee Park, everyone. So we want to let you know. But testing is going to be happening 5 days this week, beginning today, now until 10:30, from 9 a.m. until 10:30 this morning. Tomorrow, December 8th, from 2:30 until 4 p.m. at McGee Park. Wednesday, December 9th, from 9 a.m. to 10:30 at McGee Park. Thursday, December 10th, from 2:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. at McGee Park. And Friday, December 11th, from 2:30 until 4 p.m. At McGee Park. And as always, the state asks you to register ahead of time. Makes things go a lot faster when you're out there. And as we mentioned last time, we believe that the location has changed just to deal with increasing crowds and traffic, and also because of the colder weather. And McGee Park offers a bit more space, I think, and maybe some places inside maybe to warm up. But anyway, that's what's going on. And then we wanted to talk about briefly the other testing opportunity that we mentioned first on Thursday, and that's out in Kirtland, this saliva-based rapid testing, which is certainly different than the nasal swab.
Yes, very different. The rapid test is individuals swab the inside of their own cheeks.
Right.
That's the difference.
But don't stick it up your nose.
Right.
Right. So that may be a better option for
that's
some people.
Much more preferred, yes.
And I think the results come in a little bit quicker as the
24 to 48 hours is much quicker.
As the results say, right. And that's happening every day, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Out at Judy Nelson Elementary School, and that's at 44 Road 6580 in Kirtland. And I'm just reading this because of our radio audience, so they know what's going on. And this is the map that they tell you of how to get to the testing site at the school. So you're kind of driving around the building from the south and then getting into the kind of entry area at the testing site.
Yes.
So that's what's going on with testing this week. So we wanted to share that with everybody and let everybody know that that's available now in our community. So we will stop there and go to our first guest.
Let's do it.
Who is on the telephone to talk with us this morning. Good morning. You're on KSJE. Thank you for calling in this morning.
Good morning, Scott and Megan. This is Jeff Bourgeois. How are you all today?
We are good. Jeff Bourgeois, thank you for calling in. CEO of Sammo Regional Medical Center, of course. And you and your employees and staff have been our thoughts since we keep hearing about and seeing these numbers that are increasing across our county. And so can you give us a start, Jeff, by telling us what your numbers are looking like on this Monday morning, please?
You bet. It's been relatively stable over the end of last week, over the weekend, but that said, very busy. The total census right now as of 6:30 this morning was 149 total patients, We had 64 COVID positive patients and another 9 on our respiratory floor that had either another respiratory diagnosis or were pending test results, for a total of 73 respiratory patients. So very, very busy in that regard. Total of 13 intubated patients, 11 of those are COVID patients. So continued high level of COVID and respiratory illness impacting our census.
Right, and that seems high to me, Jeff, from the numbers you've been sharing on these last few times you've been with us. I should be writing these down to see what they were compared to like last Monday. But are they higher than they were?
Scott, I would say yes. Let me go back to another report. A lot changes in a week, but we really had an increase over the past week, and but reached that level before the end of the week. And so that's why I say it's kind of stable to where it was towards the end of last week and over the weekend.
Great. And Jeff, recently the governor released a statement stating that individual hospitals would now be given permission to triage if necessary. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, that, Megan, would be part of a crisis standards of care plan that is in, that plan has been written. She has asked the medical advisory team that advises her and Dr. Scrace to determine if and when it's time to declare crisis standards of care. And at that time would be when triaging and rationing of care could potentially happen, depending on the circumstance at any individual hospital. So there was a article in yesterday's Albuquerque Journal around this. We expect that maybe sometime this week, maybe as early as today, the governor could declare crisis standards of care.
Right. So is San Juan Regional Medical Center close to doing that, or are we just kind of waiting on seeing if we cross over that crisis line?
It would be a statewide order, Megan, and then we have a triage board established of key clinicians within the hospital that just because the state declares it doesn't mean we're necessarily there. We've had assistance from the Albuquerque hospitals as well as St. Vincent's in Santa Fe in helping us decompress our inpatient census on an as-needed basis, really, and we're able to move patients there to help decompress our ICU and our other respiratory units so we can plan for additional admissions. So we're not there yet, but that could happen depending on what's ahead of us in terms of a continued increase in census, particularly in COVID-19 patients.
Understood. And I guess, Jeff Bourgeois, with this on declaration, if and when it comes from the governor, would that give, I guess, your local folks there at the hospital some more options or at least some more wiggle room in case you can't depend on these other hospitals to help you decompress those numbers? I guess that's my question. Just more options for you and your team?
Yes, it could. It certainly could. You know, the key thing that everyone wants to avoid is if there aren't enough ventilators to go around, how do you make the decision of who gets one and who doesn't? You know, and so, you know, she's quoted in an article from yesterday saying that the goal is to relieve the burden on our frontline healthcare providers to ensure they aren't asked to determine whose life is most valuable if, say, only one ventilator is available for multiple patients. So our plan is on a statewide basis among our hospitals to avoid that type of situation. But that option does become available under a crisis standards of care declaration. But again, everyone is working hard to avoid that.
Understood. And I appreciate that. And it's a difficult situation to be placed in, I think, for you and your team. And I want to ask you just a bit about how this impacts other patients at the hospital. You've gone to great detail to explain to us how COVID or COVID suspected patients are being kept separate, obviously, from your other patients and things like that. And so for other types of care, you know, if people are still having heart attacks, we've talked about that. People are still getting into car accidents. And so, you know, is the hospital then obviously able to then deal with these other patients for non-COVID situations while this other stuff is going on? Can you explain how that works and is working?
I'd be happy to. First of all, we always want to encourage people to seek care when they need it, particularly if you're having something that might be related to a life-threatening event like a heart attack or a stroke or just other serious illness. Do not delay in seeking care, whether that be contacting your physician or coming to the hospital. We've heard anecdotal stories nationally about how patients avoiding care end up in a worse case scenario than they would have had they sought care earlier after the onset of their symptoms. Scott, I would say it's fair to say that statewide hospitals, systems, and resources, whether they be supplies, manpower, et cetera, are being stretched and really called to develop and implement contingency type of care plans. For example, one thing we've done is we have a 16-bed unit on our fifth floor that is routinely our cardiology unit. So patients that aren't quite sick enough to be in the ICU but have a coronary diagnosis, we locate them on the fifth floor. Well, we moved those patients down to a lower floor so we could use those 16 beds for respiratory beds because we needed them. And so you start combining different types of patient populations and having to move staff around. That is an example of something we've done that is very similar to what most of the hub hospitals in the state have had to do. And the hub hospital, again, is a hospital. We're one of seven in the state that is, according to the state's disaster response plan, we are designated as a hospital to receive transfers in from certain hub facilities. The core hospitals in Albuquerque are the core hub hospitals, and you know, we routinely send patients to them as well.
Very good. And one more question before we let you go, Jeff. There, at one time, I believe, on the show, we discussed, because of our concern for the staff and the frontline workers, there being some sort of protocol where a group of workers might get some leave and the other team comes in and then you swap. Is that kind of stuff happening, especially now as this second wave is just barraging us?
What we have, Megan, it's a good question, is it's not kind of a rotating team like that, but we of course want to get caregivers who've been on the front line for an extended period off and get some rest. We encourage PTO where they can, but we're also at the point where we need to encourage staff to hang in there with us. So we've implemented some extra shift incentives for additional compensation should we ask someone to come in and work in an additional shift above and beyond their routine schedule. Additionally, we brought in a number of agency staff, particularly nursing and respiratory therapists, to assist our permanent staff with staffing needs throughout this surge.
Good to know. Well, Jeff Bourgeois, we always appreciate you calling in to talk with us about what is going on the front lines at our local hospital. We appreciate it. Again, we appreciate all your staff, too, who are doing this work day in, day out. As you mentioned, extra shifts and long hours, and the patients keep coming. So we appreciate the work that you and all your team is doing. And thank you for reporting back to us. We appreciate that, too.
Thanks for having us, and really thanks for acknowledging the frontline caregivers. They are truly doing remarkable work in very demanding circumstances. Our physicians, our nurses, respiratory therapists, and everyone who supports them on the front line have really pulled together to just do remarkable work here at the hospital. I couldn't be more proud to be associated with them.
Well, we can see why, and we appreciate it. And we'll talk again soon. Jeff Bourgeois, thank you for your time. I know you're a busy guy.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
All right. You too. That is Jeff Bourgeois. He is the president and CEO of San Juan Regional Medical Center, giving us a live update from the hospital this morning. And it's no surprise, unfortunately. We know the numbers are high, and these patients are going to the hospital, but getting the care that they need. And there are plans in place if the numbers keep increasing, unfortunately.
Right, right. It's a prepare for the worst, hope for the best situation for sure since this all began.
Right, exactly. So. But let's go to our next guest, and that is to talk a little bit about this new business grant that's available from the New Mexico Finance Authority. And Marquita Russell, who is the CEO of the organization, is joining us on the telephone. And Ms. Russell, good morning. Thank you for calling in this morning.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you.
Good to have you with us. And as we mentioned, this is a brand new program from the New Mexico Finance Authority for small businesses in New Mexico. And maybe talk to us a little bit about how this came about. This is part of the legislation from the special session that was held just last month. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually almost just last week.
Last week, but it was last month, yeah.
Well, it was right at the end of, right before Thanksgiving, the legislature met in special session and directed, among other things, $100 million of the federal stimulus money to the New Mexico Finance Authority to operate this grant program for small businesses that were hit hard by the pandemic. So we have, I think, till December 28th in which to distribute this $100 million to a number of small businesses across New Mexico.
Great. And what are the grant application requirements? What does my business need to do and have in order to qualify?
Sure. So the grants can be up to $50,000, and we're basing it on the number of employees that a business has. And what you'll need to show us is really that you were hit hard by the pandemic and that you have some business expenses left to pay. We're not asking you for copies of your receipts or, you know, documentation of loans that you still have to pay or rent that you still have to make due. But we want to see that you have, that there's some evidence that you still have expenses that you can't cover, either because your revenue has been reduced or because you've got increased expenses. So both of those things are things that make you eligible. What we'll want to see from each of the applicants is a copy of your 2019 federal tax return. And if you have not filed your 19, then please give us your 18 and a copy of whatever extension request that you put forward for that extension. We're also going to want to see that you have filed either with Department of Workforce Solutions or Taxation and Revenue or the IRS some document that shows how many employees you had for any month between January of 2019 through basically November 30 of 2020. You're allowed to choose either the highest number of employees you have so that you can maximize your loan grant, or if you're one of those large seasonal employers, you may wish to choose one of the months during the pandemic where you had lower employees and therefore could then qualify for the grant. So you have a lot of latitude in this program to choose which month to show us, to evidence that you have a certain number of employees. We're going to want to see a copy of a canceled check or avoided check. And then lastly, we're also going to want to see a copy of your driver's license and the driver's license of any owner that gets you to at least 51% business ownership, because among the qualifications is that you have to be a New Mexico business. So at least 51% of the business ownership has to be with one or more New Mexico residents. So that's really what you need in order to apply. We're going to need you to also give us some information about the actual receipts you've had since March or April 1, I guess, through November 30th, and what kinds of expenses you've had so that we can see who was hit hardest by the pandemic. It's a fairly straightforward application. It should take about 30 minutes, maybe.
Got you. And these are designed for New Mexico small businesses specifically and small businesses throughout our state, right? Wasn't that part of the legislation that these had to be or applications or the awards need to go to businesses throughout the state, not just in the urban corridor, I guess?
That's right. And we've set 40% of the dollars aside for areas outside of Albuquerque, Rio Rancho, Las Cruces, and Santa Fe. So 40% of the money is being, $40 million is being set aside for businesses outside of those urban areas.
And another kind of focus on food and restaurants and food service, and that's part of this as well?
Yes, the legislature asked us to do a couple of things. They said make sure they're New Mexico businesses, make sure the grants don't exceed $50,000, and give priority to businesses that were in the hospitality and leisure industry. So we've set aside some dollars for hotels, motels, any lodges. We set aside, that's 20%. We set aside 20% for restaurants and other bars, food service organizations, and then an additional 15% for other leisure, hospitality and leisure businesses. So if you're a tourism-based business and you've been hit extremely hard, there's a 15% pot of funds set aside for that as well. So we're trying to ensure geographic dispersion, which was one of our requirements, and we've set aside those dollars for the hospitality and leisure industry, as the legislature asked. And then lastly, as I mentioned earlier, we'll be collecting information about your the receipt of cash that you've had during this time period and how much money you've had to pay out so that we can determine severe economic impact. And we'll be funding applications not in the order in which they were received, but in the order in which you suffered the most. And we'll be basing that on that profit and loss as divided by your number of employees. So that's the process.
Very good.
That's great. That makes sense. And so, Marquita, tell us one more time how we apply and where to go and what the deadline is.
Sure. So the application opens today at noon, and you'll go to our website, which is nmfinance.com. And there in the middle, there's this gold button that says Small Business Cares Relief Grants. And that'll take you to a landing page. And in the middle of that is an application form. It's really important to note that you have, and you'll see either on the frequently asked questions or as you open the application itself, the documents you're going to need to upload. And we would remind you that we can't save the application. There's no way to go in and just sort of save your process and come back. So look at that, find out what you'll need, gather those documents, and take your time making sure you get the electronic documents right, because we won't have an opportunity to go back later and correct that. So nmfinance.com. We're going to be keeping this application open from noon today until Friday, December 18th, again at noon. But we are going to be doing three different application rounds within that. So if you apply, you know, anytime before Thursday at noon, you're going to be considered in the first round of applications, and we're going to be prioritizing those at noon on Thursday and processing up to $40 million of grants. We're going to do that again on Tuesday the 15th. Same thing, any application that wasn't funded in the first round and has been submitted, and anything that got submitted in that intervening time, we're going to put another $35 million of grants out based on that application date. And then right at the end, if you can't get your application in till the end, we're going to keep aside $25 million in order to do those last grant applications. So anyone that submitted an application that hasn't been funded by that by December 18th will be prioritized, and we'll hand out as much money as we have, which is that $100 million in total. And then at that point, if we're unable to fund you, you'll receive your letter of decline that says we simply didn't have enough money.
Very good. Well, it sounds like, again, it sounds like a lot of money, but I know it goes quickly, and there's a lot of need in our state. So thanks to the legislature for putting this together, and for you all for making it available to businesses throughout our state. And thank you for coming on the program to kind of share that important information with our audiences today. Thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate the invitation. And again, nmfinance.com, and I go to that CARES relief grant page so that you can see what you'll need. There's frequently asked questions because, you know, while we put aside some application requirements, we know not everyone can meet exactly what we put out. So we have some alternative processes in place for folks. Again, maybe you haven't submitted your 2019 tax return, we have a process set up for that. Or if your driver's license is expired, or you know, whatever the reason, we have some alternative documentation that you can use. So please apply. We really want to help those businesses that need the most help.
Well, there are a lot. So thank you very much, and good luck
You're
going
welcome.
Through all those applications. And again, thank you for calling in this morning. We do appreciate it very much.
Sure. I appreciate the invitation. Thank you so much.
Of course. You're very welcome. That is Marquita Russell. She is the CEO of the New Mexico Finance Authority, speaking with us today about these new Small Business CARES Act grants that are available now in the state. As of noon today, the applications will be open. So good to know.
It's good to know. That's great. I mean, that's super welcomed news, I think. We're seeing
yes.
more and more local businesses struggle and actually close down.
Yeah. So not good. A couple of things we want to share
yes.
on the program today. We know it's not necessarily directly COVID-related, but folks that are struggling, mm-hmm. This is important to let everyone know about. Again, our friends over at the Echo Food Bank are doing another food distribution that is happening this Friday, December 11th, from 9 a.m. until 11 out at the Echo Food Bank location on South Commercial in Farmington. First come, first served. Lineup starts at 8:30 from Miller Street to Elm Street. They're going to do backpacks for children kindergarten through eighth grade. The kids have to be present, and you can call Echo Food Bank for more information about what that is all about. But that is happening this Friday, December 11th, and you can get information about that at 326-3770.
Very good. Yes, and notably, it's first come, first serve, and excuse me, no ID is required, which
right.
is notable.
Exactly, or residency or income requirements.
Yeah.
So it's really open to everyone if you just can get there to start lining up at 8:30. So
yes.
that's how it will work this Friday. So that's what's coming up. And let's go to some of the other stats that we like to share with everybody about the pandemic. And as we do on Mondays and Thursdays, talking a little bit about the numbers that are coming in. We start with Johns Hopkins, and they are tracking the numbers as they have been doing since March.
Very good.
39 weeks ago,
yeah. Ooh, month nine. So confirmed cases in the United States is at now 14,764,898. U.S. confirmed deaths are now at 282,348.
Yes.
Yes.
So that number keeps getting, and it seems like just a few weeks ago, it was a few weeks ago, we were at 250,000, and now we're at 284.
Yeah, 82. Yeah.
Pardon me. The number of deaths are increasing. That's my point, I think.
Yep.
Weekly. So we're seeing that these numbers get higher faster.
Yes.
Is my point. So, and as we've heard from the hospital, the patients are showing up at the hospitals all across our country.
Yes.
So there's that going on. In New Mexico, we can take a look at some of these numbers again. Still high. Not as high as they were, although I think we had another near record of over 2,000 cases over the weekend. But Sunday, it was only 1,250 new cases. But we are now above 100,000, as we mentioned last week, 108,000 with 88 cases. San Juan County had another 124 new cases reported on Sunday for a total of 6,787 cases since March. There were 11 deaths in New Mexico reported yesterday. That is lower than we saw. We had 40 at one point in one day. Out of those 11 deaths reported on Sunday, one of them was from San Juan County, and we had another 653 numbers and people added to the recovery number for 37,041 recoveries since March, which is good news.
That is good news.
So we celebrate that. The other news stories we cover on KSJE.com, there's the New Mexico numbers again, the Navajo Nation numbers. Again, they're at 177 new cases on Sunday for a total of 17,915 cases and no additional deaths. And that number stands at 667 deaths. And then again, the other important story about the Navajo Nation stay-at-home order has been extended till the end of this month, basically December 28th. And they just got out of the one on last week, which they just kind of extended it.
Right.
So, and the information is all on our website, ksje.com, everyone. And you can kind of keep tabs of what's been what's been going on. The other thing I wanted to mention was that the COVID dashboard that the state has been putting together. And I want to give a shout out to poor San Miguel County, which I mangled on Thursday because I couldn't figure out the name of that yellow county. There's still only one county in our state that is in the yellow zone. Everybody else is in the red zone. And the one yellow county is San Miguel, the home of the great city of Las Vegas, New Mexico. I just wanted to make that correction. And the other thing I thought we could look at today, we haven't seen this in a while, is the breakdown. Of course, we know San Juan County is in red, but how does that break down into zip codes, right? And
right.
The state does that. So if we kind of take a look, there's only a few zip codes in the area. And so the one green is kind of there on La Plata Highway, just south of the state line at Colorado, is a green zip code. And then the other yellow zip code would be kind of the Flora Vista area. And then most everything else you can kind of see is red for the most part. Certainly the four cities, Kirtland, Farmington, Aztec, and Bloomfield are all in the red area. Many, many cases being reported. So we hadn't seen that in a while, so I thought that would be good to show.
Right.
And you can see the breakdown for the county there, again, of how many cases. And again, the majority are female, 52.8%, male, 47.18%. And the age breakdown, which again, you pointed out on Thursday, was interesting because the majority of cases are in the younger ages.
Correct.
Not those, you know, elderly like we would consider 80s, 90s, 70s.
Right.
You know.
Perhaps 50s, Scott?
No.
I love the increased cases on youthful hubris, personally.
Yeah, right.
We got some Icaruses out there flying too close to the sun.
Exactly. Well, you can kind of see it there on that graph, right? The 20 to 29, 30 to 39, and 40 to 49 are the peak case numbers.
Right. So, I mean, I think there's a perception of somewhat of a invincibility based upon survival rate, but of course, as we've been told over and over again, we don't actually know who is vulnerable and who is not, in the sense that there's plenty of young people who end up succumbing to this illness. And of course, as Mr. Bourgeois was telling us, the capacity issue is a real issue. Nobody wants that to happen.
Right. So. Well, and the other thing we don't know is if someone gets, you know, I guess, contracts COVID, COVID-19, we don't know necessarily how it's going to impact with their system, right? And their underlying medical conditions and what have you. So they may get a mild case, they may be asymptomatic and never have a symptom and get it and get rid of it. But others may get it and get hit really hard and end up on a ventilator. And it doesn't matter what age you are.
Correct. And or a long hauler, you know, we hear stories about that all the time. Nobody wants these lasting effects from this. And
well, that's true too. For the folks that have recovered, we talk about those numbers every show, and you know, we don't talk about what those medical, long-term medical conditions, those recoveries may still be dealing with once they're done with COVID.
Right.
And so that's a concern to me. So
I'd
rather not get it.
Me too.
I'm still on that list.
Me too.
Exactly.
Me too.
Last thing we want to look at, I think, is the watch list. Again, there is no one on the closure list. We mentioned that the state has kind of changed its requirements for closing a business, but these are businesses that are on the State Environment Department's watch list who've had multiple rapid responses, meaning there's been a positive COVID case in their business, and the state has gone in to trace that to try to find out how many other folks may have been exposed to a COVID infection. And so, again, we can look at this list of Core and Main Waterworks in Farmington with two, Harvest Midstream with two in Bloomfield, Hillcorp in Aztec with two, Malloy Honda in Farmington with three, Overwrite Trucking in Farmington with two, and others include PESCO in Farmington with two, Walmart Supercenter at East Main with two, Central Consolidated School District in Shiprock with two cases, two rapid responses, Country Club Elementary in Farmington with two rapid responses, Newcomb High School with two, and Nijoni Elementary in Shiprock with two. So those are the latest on the watch list.
Numbers.
And the state updates that. Again, it's transparent. It's on their website. And folks can check it out and see. But again, there are no closings or closures of a business currently. As we mentioned, the East Main Walmart was shut down from Thursday to Saturday for cleaning, and they've reopened.
Yeah. Super interesting, because there's not a consistent theme as to what businesses are having the most rapid responses, like what type of businesses. It's just
right. Not all retail or all manufacturing or what. It's a mix.
They're all different. Yeah.
Which means
schools. It's all different.
So, got to be careful. So there you go.
Yes.
That's all I had for today, but you had something to share?
I do have something to share.
Always. Such a sharing person.
Sharing is caring.
That's right.
So I'm a subscriber to Wired Magazine. I don't know if you know about this magazine.
Of course.
It's a science and technology magazine.
Yeah. Right.
And I appreciate it. It tends to have solutions-based journalism. So, you know, they detail a problem, describe how folks have solved it. It's very optimistic in a lot of ways without sugarcoating. So anyway.
And I like that kind of journalism. Not to interrupt you, but we don't hear a lot about that type of journalism. So it's not just reporting on what's horrible or what's these horrible things that are going on in our world, but also to say, but here's maybe some solutions on how we can make it better.
Correct. And here's solutions that have happened, right?
Yeah.
So they recently sent to my inbox a it was kind of a collection of articles, and the whole purpose of this was, here are some advancements we've made during the pandemic, and this is particularly as it pertains to new technologies as well as just different ways that we've socially navigated it. So one of those ways, for example, was how people are being, you know, a little more innovative with their transportation, for example, because city transportation has shut down, et cetera.
Sure.
One of those things, though, was an AI ship. So shipping during COVID, not happening, not wise. We don't want close quarters like you have on ships for long periods of time.
Okay, these cargo ships you're talking about.
We're talking about like shipping supplies and stuff.
Like big, okay.
Yeah. So they have been working, similar to cars, right? They've been working on this AI stuff for quite some time. But now there's just more fervency to get it done because of this pandemic thing. So anyway, so the new Mayflower, I love that they're calling it that.
Sure.
The Mayflower autonomous ship shall be setting sail probably in the spring. And I always think, I don't know about you, but when I hear AI command, I always think about 2001 Space Odyssey.
Right.
So
creepy,
it's like scary.
Overreach.
It's totally creepy. Yeah. It's like HAL 29,000, you know, trying to shove me out the airlock the whole time. So, but there are no humans aboard this ship, so we don't have to worry about that. It's just the electronic captain who is sending reports each day.
Right.
But nobody is actually present
on the ship. No humans on board this
ship. No humans on board at all.
Taking a cargo from A to B.
Correct. So it's going to be sailing across the Atlantic from the UK, and I just found that super fascinating.
Who's going to watch for icebergs? I'm concerned about this.
Well, you know, it's got like whatever. I don't know.
There's radar. Seeking.
Yeah, it's all radar.
The cameras galore and everything else. It's very interesting.
It is. Well, and you know, I'm a huge fan of AI.
But there goes my second career as a longshoreman, I guess.
You were at the Dancing with the Stars in a sailor costume.
I was.
In the inaugural Dancing with the Stars.
There is some photographic evidence of that.
There is evidence of that.
Right.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I'm a huge AI person because I think human error is more likely than computer error, in my opinion.
Okay.
Depending on, I guess, the quality of your technology. But IBM has been the forerunner on this.
Interesting.
So.
Well, as we talk, you know, we hear more and more about autonomous cars and other things. So, shipping makes sense, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I mean, come on, you know, how many people fall asleep at the wheel or drink too much or whatever? I mean, there's so many reasons why humans can
taking the human component out of it.
Yeah, so I say give it over to the computers shipping across the Atlantic. Who wants to be involved in that? The Mayflower one was rough enough.
Right. Well, anyway. Bon voyage.
Yeah, so
Mayflower
I look forward
two,
to Mayflower 2.
Or 3, or whatever number we're on, but that's interesting. Okay.
And well, there you go.
Stay tuned, everybody.
Stay tuned.
And we'll be back, I guess, with, we will be back.
We will be back on
Thursday.
We
will be back. I am going to be here on Thursday with an update, of course, on all the information that we compile. We've got some great guests lined up as well. Another hospital update set for Thursday and much, much more. So we hope you will join us then. And again, we invite you to share this program with your networks and your people that you think deserve to know this information as well, because it's local and we appreciate the folks who came on the program today.
That's
so,
right.
Until next time, everyone, stay well and stay safe. Wear your masks and wash your hands, and we'll see you on Thursday. Bye-bye. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.